Well, some people say that like meditation music defeats the purpose of meditation, that it should be more about non-thought, and we use meditation music. What is our philosophy on using meditation music, and why is it better?
Well, let me clear up something. We also meditate to no music. Okay, so we don't just choose to meditate to music. It depends what you want to achieve. At the end of the day, when you listen to music, forget all that. At the end of the day, you want to achieve one single thing. And that one single thing that you want to achieve is non-thought. That means no babbling in your head, no talking, no verbal anything, okay? Most people, that's almost an impossible task to achieve. So the real question is how do we help a person to learn or to train those neural pathways in the brain to have less chatter? And do it very quickly, because we're result-driven. Everything we do at HBI, results, 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 okay? Bottom line is, when you're listening to music with no words in it, okay, and you kind of let that music move through you, you're going to find that your babbler starts going down significantly. It's when you listen to the same piece of music over and over and over again that you build up a resistance and you'll start chatter. So you kind of do want to introduce fresh music into it all the time. But at the same token, that's why we utilize music.
Okay. And I'm just going to adjust that a little bit. Why do we encourage the use of like more fast-paced music? Most people listen to new agey music. We tend to go more towards trance and stuff like that.
Well, I think that you have to keep in mind that society has changed dramatically in the past even 20 years, forget 50 or 100 or 1,000 years. And, you know, you have to go back over 1,000 years if you're going to really look at the development and kind of distribution of meditation teachings. It was at a time period where the music was much softer, the environment was less demanding. Society has changed, demands have changed. So I think that our brain is used to a higher pattern of processing. So the idea isn't necessarily to listen to fast music in the sense that it makes you faster. The idea is that it makes you slower once you kind of let your mind go and build a resistance or a normalization to take that high speed and bring it down in octaves. Often when you hit the right state of mind, you can't even hear the music. You've actually utilized the faster beats and the faster rhythm and the music kind of like a trampoline to get into a zen state, a consciousness state where you can't even hear the sound no matter how loud it is. You're just like just super focused. Mm-hmm. And to be able to achieve that quickly without 10 or 20 years of practice is just unbelievable. Mm-hmm. But we have people do it all the time.
Mm-hmm. Now, is it also that the music propels you emotionally, and does that impact
you? All things. It's going to impact you emotionally. It's going to impact you with your breathing pattern at first, and then you'll adjust. Eventually, your mind is going to take over, but you can use all of these things as a trampoline to move you there. But let's clarify something. We don't always listen to fast-paced music. We listen to calm music. We listen to fast-paced music. I do not want my students to be niched into one singular pattern. They need diversity. They need to be able to very quickly move to different situations. You know, you could be in an extreme situation that you don't want to be in, and it's noisy. It's just a terrible place. What you need to be able to do is to just sit, drop, and go into a zen state, and you've been in a situation that you've trained under and worked under your mind under those circumstances. If you want to go meditate under a tree in the park and just find your zen state or your relaxation, fine, you can do all those things, but we do have a bigger goal at the end of what we're doing. It's not just so that you can just relax. There's something bigger that I'm after to awaken in each individual person, and this is the fastest way to achieve it. But are you going to get really deep states of consciousness? Absolutely. When you can't even hear blaring rock music in a you know, because of the method you're using, and you're just in this super zen quiet state of consciousness, how does it get any better than that?
Mm-hmm. So that actually goes into more of like a purposeful drive behind why we're doing what we're doing. It's not just for relaxation. It's not just to have a better ease of life. Right. There's a direct purpose behind it. Can you speak on that?
Sure. You know, it's like this. I think that there are people who are seeking meditation just to relax, just in day-to-day life, business life, corporate life, call it whatever you want. There's a lot of demands on human beings as we've progressed in technology and society. And just having the ability to find a way to just lower your blood pressure, slow your mind down, and just feel relaxed and calm, that's pretty much the easiest thing to achieve. Mm-hmm. And you'll achieve that very quickly and very easily through this method. But what I am after is finding the people that are searching for something more, some in-depth meaning to who they are, what they are. I believe these people have had a calling their entire life, a silent calling, something that they felt within them that was driving them. I often say it's like God calling you, or the universe calling you, or the force calling you. It's something where they know there's a higher purpose that they're supposed to be serving, but it's just not a world religion. It's not one of these things that are classified in these areas, but it is absolutely spiritual. And my goal is to assist people to awaken that they're seeking, to bring it to their consciousness, to bring it to their mind, to make them understand, and more so to connect with this dynamic energy that's all around them. They've always known it's there, but they've just never known how to really tap it or approach it or utilize it. And that's what we're doing. We're showing people how to do that.
And so in Foundation, you teach the foundation of your teachings, a practice of meditation that does go along with music and it does go along with chakra points.
Mm-hmm.
Can you explain why we meditate, although there's 7 primary chakra points, mm-hmm. why we choose the base chakra, mm-hmm. heart chakra, mind mm-hmm. chakra, why mm-hmm. we don't mess around with the crown chakra or right. certain right. other ones?
Well, you have to keep in mind, if you understand the chakra points, they're going to pull from one another. It's consciousness. If I think about my hand right now, that's where my mind is. It's going to be centered in this particular area. But I'm also aware of my arm. I'm aware of my other hand tapping it. Okay, so all of these are the direction where your mind is going. When you're actually touching your chakra point, unlike just thinking about it, you're inviting stimulation, you're centering, okay? But we're drawing from these other two locations. The number one goal is to accelerate your development very quickly, rather than taking 10, 20 years to develop experiences or reach deep states of mind. What we're actually doing is we're achieving them in a fraction of that amount of time. So by meditating specifically on these spots, we feel it's a triangulation, if you will. And that triangulation all of a sudden brings the mind into this like perfect frequency, this perfect pitch. And when you hit it, you'll know it, because it's just intense. It's just amazing. When you start working on other chakras, they're pushing either energy zones, or you know, you're working on your healing zones for your body. I think healing's wonderful, but I just don't think everybody feels that that's what they need. Most people that come to Higher Balance, they want to drive their consciousness into a higher level of understanding, a level of just absolute phenomena, spirituality, closeness to the universe, and that's what we're going after. A lot of the other chakra points are body oriented. They're healing oriented. It's not exactly ideal for what we're trying to achieve. It's not to say that we don't teach them in great detail. We certainly do. But if you want to accelerate your experience and not take 10, 20, 30 years to do it, this is how you're going to do it. Most people don't realize that most spiritual achieved people usually have not really made that real true level of achievement until they're in their 70s or 80s. They've given entire lifetimes. My students, in their first year, the first several months, are achieving things that these people are talking about that are 50, 60 years practiced already. And that's just insane. So the idea is, again, is that if we can deliver the results, you will spread out on the rest of the details. It'll just naturally come out. So it's a very different approach. It's an accelerated approach, but there is no time to be waiting. If this is what you're looking for and you're looking to dial in, this is how you want to go about it. So we concentrate on the most primary three to create a triangulation that just intensifies the experience that you want. It awakens you. I'm trying to draw that sleeper within you forward to merge with your consciousness, to awaken you.
Awesome. Now, speaking on, you know, people that have meditated and done spiritual practices for so many years to get to where they're at, mm-hmm. you from an early age had already developed yourself to an awakened state.
Mm-hmm.
And you didn't, unlike a lot of other spiritual teachers, have yourself a guru or a lineage that you mm-hmm. kind of came from. How did that happen for you so fast?
I don't think it was fast at all. I think it seemed to have taken a very long time. You know, when one says, you know, you were enlightened very young, I don't even feel enlightened at times. I, you know, this is something that I'm labeled with because people are just you know, intrigued by what I have to say and what the results are that they get. I would say that, you know, like anybody else, I'm on an enlightenment cycle, a process, and there is different parts of that. There's a very spiritual part. There's a psychic part, which I keep separate, but I teach on both because they make sense. And there's a human side. I think as I grow older, I mature and I gain wisdom. And I think, you know, wow, I'm so much older, you know, and wiser in my 40s, approaching my 50s now, than I was in my 30s. And in my 30s, I thought, of course, I was a lot smarter then. And so this is aging wisdom. It humbles you. On the same token, spiritually, I think that I probably came in pretty strong spiritually, but I think that a lot of white cells, a lot of people seeking this also do, but you have to take in consideration, it's like a roll of the dice. What are your parents like? What beliefs do they have? What are they going to impose on your mind as you're molding and developing your youth? You might be rebelling, but they're also slowing that process down if their belief isn't kind of where you're starting to go now or awaken to. So if they have strong religious views and they're not for you, it's going to take a long time that you've wasted challenging that, learning why you don't agree with it. Because a navigator just simply always kind of knows, but we still have to have that human debate, that human process. Whereas, you know, I had a father that was spiritually inclined and into psychic stuff, not necessarily developed spiritually. And I had a mother that was more or less an atheist, but she always imposed the idea that there is a God, I don't ever want you to be alone. So I had complete freedom to explore my own spiritual growth. And that turned out to be probably one of the most secret recipes to that success. So I was able to go out in the stone and look in the water and see the micro life and then look up in the sky and see the macro life. And things started to revolve very quickly because I wasn't confronted with any suppression due to family members or what I was, you know, pushed in any one direction. I was allowed to freely go in the way I want. You got to keep in mind, I was doing psychic work from a very young age, which I don't consider spiritual, and I've outgrown a certain stage of that. But had I not gone down that road and it was suppressed, then, you know, it would have been a problem. And there were some hiccups on the way. There was a whole, you know, ooh, there's the devil, there's God, you know, your gifts could be from the devil, they could be from God. And fortunately, I got past that time period very quickly and matured intellectually to move past that. But had I not had that opportunity and that freedom, I may not be where I'm at now.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, and that goes into a lot of spiritual teachers, or they call themselves gurus, They call themselves like God incarnate. Shy away from those labels. Yeah, and yeah. What are your thoughts on claiming to be God incarnate?
I think a lot of those people are just purely ego-driven. Listen, I'd be lying if I didn't say that I felt a very strong connection to the Force. I've spent my whole life trying to find God. But I think even you, the reason why you're here is the same pursuits that I have, the same pursuits that anybody who's listening to this right now, you. Have this need to drive yourself. It's just enough to drive you crazy. Your whole life searching for this connection to God and having to get through all of these religions and belief systems and everybody's philosophies because you just instinctively know it's not the correct one. So for me, there is a spiritual state that you attain. And I think that a lot of spiritual masters in ego, they say they're egoless, but I don't believe it. Want to say that they're God, I think that you attain a relationship with God. I think that you attain a stronger connection to God. And at some point at their peak, they identify that and then they somehow have converted back to the ego state. And then they go, well, I'm God, I'm this, I'm that. Listen, if you look at all the cells of your body, they're individual. If I would say to you, are they you? It's a duality. It's like, yeah, they're me. But no, I'm this other consciousness. I can't point to where I am, but I'm residing. I'm coexisting, okay? It's like saying, well, what if one of your cells was smart enough to self-identify? What if it was smart enough to realize it was part of something much bigger, which is you? And it says to the other cells, well, I'm God. you can't say it's wrong, but you can't say it's right. And that's really what's going on, is there's some of us that have attained a level of connection, so we're like, well, I've reached this God level, but I'm not going to have any fantasies or delusions about it. You know, I get what it is. But there are times where I feel spiritually so evolved that there's this connection, this communication, this vibration. And it's very pure and it's very amazing. So in some ways, you know, I could say, okay, well, it's God. It's a passion of God. It's an aspect of God. And you know that this is just so immense and so beyond yourself. But it's like saying, oh, I've achieved it. But you have to remember that the world is always waiting there. And so this is where you have that kind of fine line, and you've got to know the difference. So I shun away from those things because, I'll be the first one to be pushed off the pedestal. You know, I don't want to be put on a pedestal. I hate it when people are like, you're a guru, or you're enlightened, or you're this. And yeah, okay, fine, I'm enlightened. I've wrestled with all that, but it's more or less to reach people and talk to people. But I hate it. I despise it. I'm just me. I'm evolved. I have attained immense amount of experiences. I would say that I haven't really met anybody, and this sounds terrible, that's where my mind is at, but that doesn't mean they don't exist. I certainly believe that anybody can do what I can do if they apply themselves, if they're a navigator, if they're a white cell, if they really are pursuing this and they listen and they put it into practice. All I'm doing is saying, this is how I got to where I am. This is what I did for this experience. This is what I did for this experience. And I've always believed what one man can do, another can do. And at the end of the day, I am in a body, I am a man, and I am driving myself to these things and I'm achieving them. And if you want me to share that, I'm happy to share that, but don't put me into a box or try to mold me into what you think is the ideal of what I should be, or the ethics by which I live, or the what I should eat, or what I should do, or whatever. I don't want that. I'm not in it for that. I'm just in it to be me. And if you want to know what I have to say, I'll share what I have to say. And that's what I'm doing.
Okay, awesome. Well, that actually kind of steers me to the question that I want to ask you about your spiritual beliefs versus a lot of other spiritual beliefs. They believe that enlightenment means to be egoless. And you're right, saying that you can be an enlightened being or an right, enlightened master, right, and still have an ego.
Well, look, I would love to say that, you know, that I don't believe anybody is egoless. I think the ego is a vital ingredient towards human life. It's something that we can utilize to grow ourselves, to expand ourselves. At the end of the day, you know, everybody has an interpretation of ego. Okay, and when I look at spiritual masters, and I don't like commenting on this. I don't like commenting on it at all because it brings a lot of criticism to those people who say, well, that's my teacher, or this is my belief system, and oh, you know, he's attacking it. I just find that you look closely at these people, and you know, whether they just don't live up to what I would consider as an egoless life. But for me to say that they haven't attained any level of consciousness, for me to say that they haven't attained a spiritual level to some degree would also be a lie. I can recognize it, okay? But for them to put on a persona, I think it's the human half. That's the ego. It's the power. It's the superiority. And I just have a disdain for it. And, you know, privately, people close to me know how I feel about it. But, you know, to go public about it now, you know, that's just my position. I just don't buy into it. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's the ego can be utilized to expand yourself. But you've got to keep your ego in check. To be egoless, I don't think is possible. To be ego in check is what you should be driving for. Where is my ego getting out of control? Where is my pride getting out of control? Can I put it back in the check? To be mindful of those things, I think is the inspiration of any spiritual person, is